been really visiting on some things, and I want to speak on the word today, which is from the gospel's message. It's the word of the wise men, because I think God is trying to say something to us as a church and to us as individuals. Your rector's council's been in much prayer recently, and we just have this thing that's kind of nowhere, that 2013 is going to be a year of grace and might. And we got to get our expectancy up. We got to begin to believe that we are, because He is. The story of the wise men is one that's really shrouded in a lot of mystery. From tradition, we supposedly know all of these facts, but from the biblical account, there's more questions than answers. I mean, how many really were there? One commentator I read said to have made that trip through the desert, through dangerous areas, that the caravan was probably 600 people. See, these weren't just your commoners. These were the elite of the day. And they didn't travel alone. They didn't put gold and frankincense and myrrh in their camel's hump and catch you on the backside of the desert. No. When they traveled probably with an army, with servants. It was a long trip. I find it interesting, it's so much in the Bible, that just out of nowhere these guys appear and just as mysteriously they're gone again. They don't fill a lot of the book. And yet what they teach us, I believe, are three things that we need to know. And I think we especially need to know this year. And I don't know why I'm saying that. But the first one is that a wise man's journey is one of faith. We want too many answers. I believe that some of us stay up at night dreaming of questions. Most of us, if we were honest, we have this list that we're going to ask when we see Jesus. Nah, we won't. We'll be so in awe, and all of them will just be like vapor and disappear. But what possibly could prepare 3+ men to leave the comfort of their home? These, by the way, were heathens, as far as we know, because at this time you were either, from the biblical perspective, you were either a Jew, a seeker, later to be known as Christians, or a heathen. We have no evidence that where they came from, they knew of the Christ, but they were astrologers, and they studied the sky. And I don't believe it was by accident. I think they were dedicated men who saw a star. Now let me give you the miraculous of that star. And I hope my geology is right here. The earth moves towards the east in a constant spin. So it would appear that the heavens move to the west. But this star caught them in the east and followed them eastward followed them westward, opposite of the spin of what most stars do. I mean, that itself is miraculous. But I come back to what could have possibly possessed these non-believers to leave the comfort of the home? Romance, yeah. For you romantic types, you probably would. My wife would say, not David. Seeking of wealth, most definitely. But faith? Yeah, these men had a faith. They didn't have a faith in God necessarily, but they had a faith that there was a king. They knew the evidence. They had heard the story. They saw the star. And they had but one thought on their mind. Where was he who was born the King of the Jews? For we have seen his star in the east. See, they asked the probing question. They had no doubt. In their language, it shows that they had no doubt that he had been born. They had no question that he was. Their question was, where is he? How often we get caught up in things and we forget to say, where is God in this? Where is the Christ? They had seen the star, they had faith, and they went to find him. And they were willing to risk everything in that adventure. Can you imagine their neighbors' reactions? So, you're going on a journey? And their answer, yes. Where are you going? We don't know for sure. How far is it? We don't know that either. How long are you going to be gone? We're not quite sure. All the things that would want to make you want to go immediately. But you know, that's no different than in times past what other neighbors said to other people. Abraham, when he left his home and all his possessions and went to a place where God was going to show him. Or how about Noah building an ark at a time when it had never rained in all of history? Or Peter, Andrew, John, James, leaving their fishing nets because someone wanted to make them a fisher of men. Can you imagine their, how am I going to hook a man and not get stoned for it? I can just hear the neighbors going, what, are you crazy? Are you insane? Are you out of your mind? No, they weren't crazy. They weren't insane. They weren't out of mind. They were just men seeking truth, men of faith. Here's a fact for you. God's journeys always involve faith. Faith does not deal only in the known. We like to run in the known. We get uncomfortable when we're in the unknown. We get uncomfortable in that time of tension where, well, we think, but maybe not, but could be. Faith is in a place of tension. Faith is the evidence of things unseen, the Word says. There's not a journey that God sends us on that will not involve somehow being Gumbies and letting our faith get stretched just a little more. Hebrews 11:6 says, you must believe that he is, and that he is a rewarder of those who diligently seek him. I love that term, seeking. I love it more and more. I mean, early Christians were called seekers. It's a term of operation. It's a term of, we're almost there, but we're not yet. We think we know, but maybe there's more. It's an active process. But always remember, anything God has sent you on has required a journey into faith. Enjoy the tension of believing. The second thing that this scripture teaches us, I believe, is that a wise man's journey is one of devotion, worship, reverence. I don't care which term you use. When you get a dictionary, they're all there together. I didn't use worship because generally we think worship is what was happening here this morning. But worship is just wanting to be in the presence of God. We worship every day. When we get up and we stop ourselves and we go to God, we're in worship. When we represent ourselves to be something other than the normal person, whatever that is, we're in worship. See, worship is an active, one of those active words. So we can use devotion or we can use worship. We can use reference. But when the wise men went on their journey, it was for the single purpose of worshiping, of honoring a king. And with them, they took preparations to do it. They didn't get there, wherever there was going to be, and assume that then they could go get the gold and frankincense and myrrh. No, they transported it with them. And you say how much? It really doesn't matter how much, but I'll tell you, it was enough to sustain the Holy Family when they went to Egypt and lived in exile. God provided them the purse before they knew there was a journey coming up. And the gifts were symbolic of things that we understand. Gold represents the wealth, a good gift for a king. Frankincense was the sap of a tree that had been dried and hardened and was used in the worship of God, was used as incense. Burning incense before the Lord. Y'all remember how we used to do that? Someday we will again. And let's don't go to the peanut gallery. Myrrh was a perfume that was used and really represented the humanity of God. It was used in burial acts. Here's another fact for you. Now don't mess up my facts from my points. See, I gave you a point. Journey is one of faith, and a fact that faith does not just deal in the known. Then I gave you a point. A wise man's journey is one of devotion or worship. And here's a fact. Devotion always, worship always involves sacrifice. There's a price to be paid by these wise men who went on their journey. Travel in those days was probably not really comfortable. I never knew whether they rode on one hump or two hump camels. But I got a feeling it really didn't matter on a long trip. You got saddle sores. These men sacrificed their own comfort to find the king. I love what King David said in 2 Samuel 24:24. I will not offer to the Lord my God, burnt offerings that costs me nothing. Why do we tithe? Because it's sacrificial giving. It's giving back to God what He gave us. I just kind of think it's neat that God lets us keep 90%. But I didn't mean to go there today. True devotion requires sacrifice, and sacrifice does not come with pre-measured levels of comfort. I don't know how many of you have said these words, God, I offer you myself, my all in all, whatever I am or ever hope to be, I give to you. And you know what? He takes that seriously. And then he comes and says, okay, BB, we're going. And you go, whoa, whoa, wait. I didn't sign up for that. Huh? As about a 13-year-old, I kind of said that. And God took me seriously. And he kept reminding, it took him another 20-something years of reminding me what I had said. But he never forgot. It involves sacrifice. These wise men, when they left wherever they were in the east and traveled wherever they, ever how they traveled across the desert, and getting whatever saddle sores they got, I'm sure there was some murmuring in the camp of, and we're going where? David said it. I'll not offer God anything that doesn't cost me. The greatest gift, though, and here's what we need to understand, and this is where I want us to come because of the expectancy that's building in this church. The greatest sacrifice that we can give to God is ourself, our all in all. Another fact, what God wants most of all, above everything else, is just you, just me. But he doesn't want us on Sunday so that we can act like hell on Monday. There's a mistaken thing going around, I believe, that if we're Christians, we got to act like the world so we can be accepted. No, God says that we're going to make the world jealous because of our faith in Him. We've got to come to grips with we can't do the things the world does because they will judge us. There's an accountability. But as Christians, we're going to stand before the Almighty and He's going to say, why? He's not going to have to say, why what? We're going to know. As my daughter said, for the heathen, it's not there because they didn't believe anyway. They've just been fulfilling their job descriptions and they're going to get the reward they want. But for us Christians, we've got to make a difference. We got to make a difference in our offices. We got to make a difference in our neighborhood. We got to make a difference in our families. I don't know how many of y'all missed Christmas Eve, but it was the holiest Christmas Eve we've ever had here. And I sat with the kids and I was amazed at what they knew.